All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Magic in the Ordinary. Today, we have a really special episode, which is about winning mindset. And this is with Sarah Swiatek, a jiu-jitsu champion. So, welcome.
Thank you. It's quite an intro. I appreciate
Well, here, I've been really excited following your journey, and I'm so excited to talk a little bit more about winning from your perspective since you're obviously getting good at it. As you know,
I feel like I'm getting good. There's that. It's kind of a trickery of a word to say when it's like you're getting good because there's always room for improvement. And I mean, I'm just a purple belt, and I'm surrounded by so many other individuals who are have way more skill than I do, but it's neat to kind of have my own little place there and to feel like I am progressing and growing. I think right after you or right before you had reached out to me was when I was in Mississippi and had won the championship belt with Summit Grappling there. And yeah, that was a surreal night. That was you never go in like you don't want to be cocky, so you never go into a tournament just being like I'm gonna like kick ass, like everything is gonna go my way, because that's unrealistic. You want to be optimistic, and you definitely want to be like, I want to be the best, I want to win this, I want like XYZ outcomes, but you still have to have like you don't want to get such tunnel vision. So when I went in, I was like, I want to go in and I want to win, but I also want to be smart. I don't want to underestimate. My saying is like, I don't want to underestimate my opponents, but I also don't want to underestimate myself. So going in and knowing it's like take one match at a time, because the way it was structured for this tournament was you got matched up with a super fight, and then of all those ladies who won their super fight matches, they then got put over into a bracket of the absolute matches for the final championship matches. So the way it went was I won my first match, so I got put into this bracket structure that was being put together for the absolute divisions. And then after all the other matches had happened, which I was towards the end anyways. And so after all those matches had happened, then they kind of shuffled the brackets, they put it back together. And they're like, all right, absolutes has started now. And so I think my first fight in the absolute was against another purple belt. And it's just like as the matches go, you're just taking them as they come. Like you're just like, all right, next one, I'm trying to be as fresh as I can be, even though it had already been kind of just a long day preparing for that. And then actually having the first fight, and my opponent, her and I have fought quite often. She's actually a gal who is from Colorado, so it was neat to be partnered with somebody in Mississippi who also is from Colorado. So that was a neat matchup, and so that was already a good challenging fight. And most of these were going for time because it was a submission only focused tournament. And so if you didn't actually get the sub, then it went to ref's decision. And I try to never leave it up to a ref's decision because it can not go in your favor, or you may have thought that you were doing really well, and then something happened, or just human error. You just don't want to leave it to human error, and it's always a difficult thing to put on the refs to make that decision. So the second fight, I had won that one against the purple, and my other match was against a blue belt. But even then, it's like you might be a belt lower than me, but I was a blue belt once, and I was a force to be reckoned with. So again, like taking that one as she can match me up just as well. And so then when I won that one, see, that's so it was purple, blue. Then the final one was, I think, with another purple or a brown. And of course, you're watching these matches as it's dwindling too, because you're like, all right, that person won. They're getting put in the next. I could fight her maybe. So as it continued to dwindle down, it was going, it was kind of like neat to see it structure down. And then, of course, it was the two black belts who were also in the mix, and they kept fighting each other or fighting a couple of the other gals who were put in the bracket. So I knew I was like, all right, it's going to end up being whoever and a black belt for this finals match. You could just see the way it was going. And so after I won that last match, leading up to the finals match, I was like, all right, going against the black belt. This is only my second time in the world of tournaments or competitions of me actively actually going against a black belt. And you just got to block that out of your head. Like you just can't be thinking, oh my gosh, this person has X amount of years experience, so on and so forth. It's like, you know what? Someone's going to win. I'm just as worthy to win that. I think that's where the whole, winning mindset or the warrior mindset comes into play, because it's like, you know what? It's not over until it's over. And the final match after four other matches had happened, and those were all 10-minute matches in the absolute. So after those had happened, there was going to be a 15-minute match against the black belt. And so after you got like a
Gosh.
3 minute break or whatever, and she's just as, has gone as just as many fights as I had. And it's like, all right, it's going to be even playing ground at that point because we're both tired, but we're both fighting for the championship belt. Plus, there was a purse. You could win, I think, $1,500 if you submitted your opponent in the first five, and then it kept dwindling down, 500 each 10 or each 5 minutes. So it's 1,500 and then 1,000, and then 500 would be like you would get it if you submitted them regardless. And so I was not worried about that. That wasn't my focus. I was like, I don't want the money. Like I care less about that. I just want to win this fight against a black belt. And so after the fight was going, and you clear your head, you're getting ready to be matched up, and then they are like, all right, you're going. And you could hear the opponent's team, and of course she was a Brazilian black belt, so they're speaking Portuguese, and it's interesting because you can't let that get in your head either. So you have like their coaches are talking. I had kind of been taken under the wing of one of these gals that I had met. Her name was Sarah. She was as well. She was super awesome. And then my sister was there. So she's like, I don't know what to do for coaching you. I'm like, just being here means a lot. And so having the opportunity to be there, my sister was there for this finals match. And it got down, I think it was 14 minutes and 34 seconds or something like that for a 15-minute match. And I finally got the sub. And at that point, I was just like, holy cow. Like I thought I th I like I kind of like knelt over and knelt forward. My sister came over and the photographer got like this beautiful picture of my sister like hugging me and me hugging her. And I was just like, all right, that encompassed that moment perfectly. But it was just surreal. And then when they're like going and raising your hand, you like look over and you're like, wow, like this was a hard fought match. She didn't give it to me. Like she was fighting hard for it as well. And it just came down to the final seconds. And she had even admitted, and I just appreciate people who are humble. Like she knew that she had lost it fair and square, but she had made a post, I think, after, and she was like, I got really tired at the end. And she just surpassed the little bit of extra energy that it had. And I was like, that's it. It's just by seconds or by a little bit more energy or a little bit more like sharpness of your mindset or a little bit more determination or drive to win that can give you that little bit of upper hand. So it was neat to have that experience and have the belt around your waist and to win $500. That wasn't the main thing, but it definitely helped pay for the trip. So after that, then when you reached out to me, I was like, yeah, I mean, I think I got some things I can talk about with.
I just the pictures, even without the full story, I just found them so inspiring. I think there's a couple of pictures with you at the side of the mat where you're just sitting there and you can just see, I don't know, all of that, like the really special moment of being fully present to something that you've worked so hard for. And just kind of sitting there surreal, but just like soaking it in at the same time. So I liked the photographer was amazing, and I and those
The
shots were
photographer was
beautiful.
amazing, and I think it was the two pictures that you're mentioning. One, it was right before my match, and I was just so in the zone, knowing that I was about ready to go against this black belt, but I had to just completely like erase that from my mind and just go in like I'm gonna go out and give it my all 15 minutes of it. If I can't get the submission, I'm going after it. And so that she was able to catch that, but then I think the next picture, one of the other ones, she caught me like actually like such a genuine like laugh or smile or something that I was doing on the sidelines. And I was like, look at these two like contrasting pictures. It's all the emotions are felt during a tournament, which I think that's the really neat thing. But people who do jiu-jitsu for just recreational purposes is awesome. And I advocate for people to at least just give jiu-jitsu a try. Like you don't have to be a competitor because you experience just amazing friendships and camaraderie from just being a daily practitioner of it. But when you're a competitor, you just get a sea of emotions and having to sort through all of that, and it does accelerate your training, but also like your cognitive adaptability and just like how sharp you are with things that you're thinking about of not getting tunnel vision and this submission is here, but then there's like 10 other submissions that are here. And I feel like a lot of people, until you've competed, it's hard to explain or it's hard to really like encompass all the whirlwind of emotions that come during, before, during, and after a tournament, because there's the preparation leading up, there's the tournament day nerves and emotions and ups and downs that you do while you're there in between the matches, depending if it's just one match or multiple. and then the riding the high for as long as possible, and then being prepared for the crash, but maybe not making it be so much of a crash, but more of like a steadying out, because I've felt the competition crash before, and that's not so much the fun part, but it's part of it, and then you gear up for the next tournament.
I love hearing about that. I think because one of the questions I was wondering, I don't think I gave you this beforehand, but I was curious how, in your head, is training versus competing, how different is it? Is it different? Like, so I like what you're saying about how competing actually helps sharpen your training. Do you feel like
Yeah.
it's like really different then in terms of like, I don't know.
So I don't feel like the training that I do to prepare or gear up for a tournament really changes. I feel like if anything, it's more the mindset that I really hone in on. So I'll do a lot more like visualization of my perfect match, even though like that's never gonna happen, but it's just nice to rehearse that in your head. And maybe you do like and visualize all the things that could go wrong and the things that you want to maybe shore up or work on. But the actual training that I do in the training room, I don't feel like changes a whole lot. I might have like, I'd say, quote unquote, like comp rounds with my teammates and things to just kind of get more of the cardio and the endurance of it. But I'm not going to go and try to teach myself a completely different sequence or a move that isn't natural for me. It's really hard. Let's say maybe you're preparing for a tournament that's like 2 months out. Between now and 2 months, the odds of you changing your game or learning some new crazy move are really, really slim, because the basics and the fundamentals are really what win and are what really help you hone in on your jiu-jitsu game during a tournament. So you're going to rely on what's comfortable when you're in those situations that are a little bit more high stress than what would be considered just rounds that you're doing with your training partners, or you're playing around with or experimenting with new techniques or transitions or submissions. That's going to go out the window when it comes time to really hone in on preparing for your tournament. So I would say the training doesn't really change. I would say I do try to like really focus on eating even healthier, even though I try to do that anyways. I really don't drink much either. So if I'm going to be like really cognizant of what I'm putting into my body, just so that way I feel like I'm operating at my best capacity. But the actual training, it doesn't really change for me. I wouldn't say if that's just for me or if that's everybody, but that's how I feel towards preparing for a tournament, is just really honing in and repetitions of what you know works well for you and your game.
I
Yeah,
love
I would
that.
say.
I love that. I love the visualization piece. I actually did this a lot when I was training for a marathon,
Yeah.
and I feel like that's part of how I finished, because I'm a slow runner. I was really, really worried that I wasn't going to make the 7 hour cutoff. Like, I was, according to my training run times, it wasn't going to happen. Like, I was
Okay.
working hard, but it was not getting there. But I remember, like, there was one long run I was doing, and I just kept visualizing, like, every time I'd make it past the finish line just in time, but sometimes there was like 30 seconds left. Sometimes I was crawling and bleeding. Sometimes I was running really confidently. But every time
Yeah.
I made it past that finish line. And I think that like I'd built that mental toughness so that when I was out on the course, I think there was something there that would it was different than it would have been if I hadn't done all that mental training as well. So I think that's I love that point too. Visualization and yeah, definitely weight.
Visualization is a key component to not just jiu-jitsu, but I feel like any sport, anything that you're doing in life, even like, I mean, let's just say for work, for example, if you're having to give like a presentation or something,
Yes.
wouldn't it be better to like visualize yourself, especially if you have a fear of speaking in front of large crowds or whatever, to visualize yourself already doing that. So then when you actually are in that situation, you're like, oh, okay, this isn't as bad, because I've literally visualized every worst case scenario in my head and dealt with the anxiety of the visualization of it. Now I'm here. I'm like, all right, this isn't really anything too crazy. Well, okay. That's like that's kind of the nice part of visualization, or being exposed to a variety of training partners for jiu-jitsu. That's why I like going to open mats a lot. I'm sure you see with my stories, I train over at the Wilsons on a lot of Sundays. So you're getting a variety of people. It's kind of a melting pot of people who come from all the gyms in Colorado Springs. Some people even come from farther, like Denver and Castle Rock and all that. So it's a nice little like melting pot. So you get to go with all these people who have different training styles or submissions, or really they don't know your game. And so then it's kind of like you're simulating a tournament, because a lot of, unless you're competing against the same people over and over, which happens a lot with me, but unless you're competing against the same people, you have an opportunity to have this exposure to a variety of different individuals and skill sets and belt ranks and all of that, and tall and short, and so then they have different games that work better for them, and so it's just really neat to have that
Oh.
melting pot of training at Wilson's when I go on Sundays for sure.
Oh, so cool. Okay, one other thing you mentioned, you said you clear your head right before a tournament. We've got those amazing pictures of you kind of sitting there su super focused. How does that work for you? Like, does it look like listening to music? How do you, because sometimes I want to clear my head even for creative endeavors, but I feel like it doesn't always just happen, you know? I
Doesn't
think
go off to go to plan.
it's
I don't know who says that. I know someone's like, your thoughts are like jumping fish, and then you're like, oh, look, there's that thought, and oh, there's that thought.
Yeah.
No, here I would say the last year I've been doing restorative yoga at my gym,
Okay.
which is more like focused on meditation and clearing your thoughts and just kind of focusing and honing in on your body. And it's not anything like what you would think yoga is. We literally call it like adult sleepover because most of the time you fall asleep from how just relaxing it is in these positions for your body. And then another thing is, like, my friend Noble Gibbons, he had told me about box breathing. And I don't know if I'd mentioned that to you before, but like when I'm sitting there and maybe if I feel a little bit of just nerves, or maybe I'm just needing to calm like my mind or my thoughts, I'll do box breathing. I think the Navy SEALs do this a lot, which is you take a deep breath in for 4 seconds, you hold for four, you exhale for four, you hold for four, and then you just keep repeating that cycle. And so it really, I don't know if it's the counting that you're counting for 4 seconds that really like brings you to your center. I don't know if it is the actual, like, you're bringing more focused and concentrated like oxygen into your body and you're thinking about that more than any of the other thoughts. So a lot of times, like when I was there sitting on the sidelines preparing, I was doing the box breathing to calm my thoughts and then just continuing to take deep breaths after I did that and then visualizing just how the next match was gonna go in my favor or anything that I just needed to really think about at the time. And sometimes you're just not thinking about anything. Which is actually really nice. And then other times for me, especially, like I'll just be so calm and I'll just feel like a presence that I'm there, I'm being present in the moment. And a lot of times I'll just like say a prayer and then it's like, it's go time. Like let's put on the shield of armor and let's go fight for this next match. So.
Oh, that is so exciting. It makes me want to compete, which I don't feel very competitive, but at this moment, it makes me inspired.
And that's the cool thing too, is like when I teach the women's class and everything, and the gals come up to me and they're like, we're so inspiring. You inspire us and we're inspired by everything that you do. And I'm just like, I'm just doing my thing. But it means so much to hear that from people, because you never know what
Yeah.
you're going to say or do that's going to motivate or inspire someone in their life. So that's the neat thing. We have a tournament coming up here in, I think maybe 3 weeks or so. It's the 14th of October. So I have a lot of people who are nervous about competing or first time competitors and stuff. So it's like, all right, you're gonna go compete, just have fun with it. If you're gonna be doing a local tournament, you're a white belt, blue belt, whatever, biggest thing is just go have fun. And so I try to really like reiterate that with a lot of my students, and especially the women who are dipping their toe in and giving it a try, and they're like, maybe I want to compete. I'm like, well, I'm not gonna like push you, I'm also not gonna oppose, but let's just like motivate you and make you feel like you're there, because I mean, what's the worst gonna happen? You're gonna, I don't know, the age old saying is, you win or you learn, right? You don't lose.
Yes.
You
Yeah.
learn lessons from it. So,
I love that. And that's good to hear. I've had a couple injuries, and I signed up for a 5K, and because I was like, I need to run again. And I was like, I actually am not at the point where I can run a full like 3 miles. But that reminder, just go have fun. Like, that's nice. It's just, I'm gonna show up.
yes.
I'm either gonna, do well or learn. And probably gonna be learning, but that's okay because we like learning too.
Exactly. And kind of to touch on injuries, like that can be a really big hurdle for people to overcome. So for you signing up, that's really awesome. And
Thank
I'm proud of you for doing that, because I can speak from personal experience. Injuries are not fun.
you.
Back in November, I didn't really talk much about it. I didn't really post, but I'm not one, like, I don't need sympathy for injuries. It's just something that it's personal. You got to deal with it. You gotta kind of deal with the waves as they come. But it was November 5th of last year. I was at a Fight to Win pro tournament and had a Dead Orchard armbar that was done on me, and I tapped quickly, but that's a type of submission that even tapping fast, a lot of damage can be done in a small window of time. And so what she had done was lock up my arm, my shoulder, and when she went to go torque and take my arm and my elbow with her extension, tendons and ligaments were tore in my right elbow.
Oh my gosh.
And so at that instance, like, the pain was minimal at first, and of course that was the adrenaline and everything. And then as the night progressed, I was like, okay, this is not going to be a good one. And I've had like minor injuries. I've had intercostal tears on my ribs. I've had
Oh.
knee little pain things, and those are little nuances that didn't really stop or hinder my capability with jujitsu. I just kind of like, all right, we'll take a little bit of time off. We'll watch from the side of the mats, and we'll kind of progress. But with this one, I lost. I couldn't. This is my, I'm right-handed, so I couldn't write anymore. I had been
Oh,
icing it
no.
a lot. At that point, you don't really know how long, because ligaments and tendons are a hard thing to kind of gauge the healing time on it. My dad is a retired chiropractor, so he was kind of able to take a look at it. He's like, it's hard for me to really tell, but like the bone is okay, because it's hard. Like in that moment, you're like, okay, did something like actually like get broken or hurt? Let's narrow it down. So when we did like kind of figure out that it was tendons and ligaments in my elbow, I was like, okay, so what's the process for moving forward? And I would say of all, like that was like the moment in my jujitsu career, I was at like a fork in the road. Was I gonna take the time it needed to heal and then just kind of back off from jujitsu for a while? Was I gonna just kind of push through it and continue with jujitsu? But I was just in constant pain. It's like anytime I try to sleep or move, I would feel the pain of
Wow.
my elbow and everything. So it was a few months of a lot of thoughts of questioning continuing with jujitsu, because it's like, all right, what is jujitsu to me, and is it worth this injury that I'm enduring? The first like major injury that I've really been able to endure, and can I come out the other side of this? And so there's a lot of conversations and a lot of praying, a lot of time thinking and talking with my parents and just trying to figure it all out. And then finally, like after different therapies and things that I'd done, and I had like some laser treatment and things done with it, and continued to ice and try to get my mobility back and all of that, I think it was right about my birthday in February, I started not feeling the pain as much. I was like, okay, all right, maybe we can get to the other side of this and have a slow progression. So from November to February, it was heavy. It was hard to continue. And so then I think by the time March came around, I was finally like, my mobility was good. But then you start dealing with like the phantom pains and the psychological aspect of it, where I felt maybe I was back to like 85% like healed, but then still dealing with the mental aspect of it. Anytime anybody would like lock around my arm, I just panic tap almost, because you just don't know and what your limits are. And the psychological hurdle was, I think, the other really challenging thing that not many people kind of talk about, because it's hard to explain. It's like, all right, you're in a position that you've been comfortable with the last 5 years, but then because of the fear, or you relive it, honestly, like you're in that moment and then you have like flashback to that instance. So then you're like panic tapping. You're like, all right, I'm done for the night. We're just gonna kind of chill out here. But then it was getting to exposure therapy. Was something that was helpful with trusted training partners, and it's kind of continuing to test my limits after I knew I was like, okay, it is healed, it's okay, like I can finally like write again. I was proud the day I could do a push-up again, because I was pretty good at push-ups. I could do three pull-ups before, and I still haven't gotten my pull-ups back yet, but I'm getting there.
Yes.
But it was doing training with trusted training partners to do exposure therapy, with being in positions that I would start feeling panicky in. And then coming past that, I think I was like, all right, I've made the commitment. Jiu-jitsu, I love it so much, I can't let it go, especially competing. So now that I've established that, we have to pick a tournament, because what's the best way to move past something that you're afraid of? Well, is to charge it head on. So I signed up for a tournament, I think a month after that. I think it was in Let's see. Oh, it was Pans, actually. It was Pans in Florida. It was Gee Pans that I think was my first tournament after
Wow,
that.
what a way to jump back in.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, well, let's just go full throttle. I feel like it's pretty good and I can always tap, you know, I can just always be done with it. And I didn't win, which, I mean, like I said, you win or you learn, because I proved to myself that I could sign up, that I could show up, and that I could hold my own. And I lost to, like, I think a point, 2 points or something like that. So it wasn't that I lost to the pain, or I lost to the phantom tapping, or any of those things. Like, I went and I proved to myself that this is where I'm supposed to be. My arm is healed, even though you still just have different things that you deal with in the back of your mind after an injury, that's normal. And then from that moment, I think in April, I was like, all right, we're planning out the rest of the year. Let's get some tournaments in the books. And then I hit the ground running from there and done some local tournaments, and then the Mississippi tournament, all those things. I was like, I have to overcome this. I have to be able to turn the page of this injury and not be defined by the injury, and make the decision, am I moving forward with competing again and pursuing jiu-jitsu as heavily as I had been? And I decided to go full throttle. And so I have actually pans this weekend. This is no gi pans. So I'm excited for that. And the goal is, because last year I placed as a silver medalist, and I was inches away from winning. But this year I'm like, you know what? I'm taking it. I'm going to be taking gold. I want to be the 2023 Pan American champion for purple belt super heavyweight class. And then if that gets in there, let's do that too. So it's been a roller coaster since November, but then I've just been on an upward trajectory ever since. And I feel like you said, I've come back stronger, which is a blessing in itself. So yeah.
That's amazing. How did you like? I feel like after injuries, they're so crushing, and it's hard when you were at a certain level, like you're saying, like, oh, I used to be able to do three pull-ups, and now I don't have them fully back yet. That's been something I've been running into too, where, you know, I want to do something, and I'll maybe walk a mile, and I'll be sore afterwards, or the, you know, I'll be aching a little bit, and be kind of like, I used to run 26. Like, this is not acceptable.
Like, what is this?
I know, it's like, how is this a thing? Yeah, how do you have any tips or I guess insights into how do you keep going when you're coming back, especially, I don't know if there's pain, and how do you keep going when there's this kind of discouragement, or do you kind of just, I don't know, ignore that, or you know, what's the
I
thought?
feel like there's a couple of different things. The first one is finding out why you're wanting to continue to push past and get over the hurdle. Like, I know a lot of people talk, like, what's your why? And there's plenty of whys for different things, but you have to hone in, what's your why for this exact thing that you're doing? Like, people have their why for a business venture, or their why for why they're going to school, or their why for, like, whatever. So you have to find your why of why you're wanting to push past and pursue that end goal of overcoming the hurdle of the injury to get back to either where you were or even better than where you were. And that goes tenfold with who you surround yourself with, who's your support group, who is going to help you during those moments of maybe self-doubt, or push you in the right ways, because they sometimes maybe know you better than you know yourself, or they're able to help you in those moments when doubt is encroaching and you're kind of getting in your head. For me, I've been very lucky to have found my family, my gym, my home, with Flow State and Chad and Jade, and my community that's there, and the people that I'm really close with at the gym. And then, I mean, I love everyone there, but you have your really close, tight-knit group that's there. And so finding those people who know your why as well, and are good. Oh, not necessarily as like an accountability buddy, because that's a different avenue, but it kind of is playing off of that, because in the end, like, you have to do it. You have to be the one that pushes yourself there, but it's helpful to have the people who have your back and who are behind you and who you know are going to be unwavering, and you can draw from their strength at times. I think it's really helpful. You know, they say, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another, and it's being surrounded by those people who are gonna help you through those moments when maybe you can't help yourself, or you're getting in your head a little too much. So,
Yes.
I think that's the important part, and knowing your why. I think those are maybe two of the most vital things to overcoming an injury, especially depending on the severity of it, or if it's something that you're wanting to really overcome. It's important who you surround yourself with.
I love that. There are so many things in life that come, the answer is community, where it comes back to who's around you and like who are you really spending time with. I think that's incredible. You know, it's in so many situations. Like, who's around you? That's who you're gonna be. I
I
love
think
that.
you had asked me one of the questions, or it was gonna, so it was the difference between like discipline and
Yes.
motivation. And that kind of plays into it too. It's like, do you have the discipline to push yourself during those times when you just want to hit the snooze button, or during those times when you're like, all right, I'm gonna do five push-ups, but then you get to three and you're like, okay, I could stop here, but maybe I'm gonna have the discipline to do five and then one more. Let's pull who is that? Ed Milette, where it's the power of one more. Like, let's just do one more past maybe what you had originally said instead of doing two or three less. I had looked up for that question that you had asked a really good quote. Let me see if I can find it in my notes. Did you by John Maxwell, and it says, "Motivation gets you going, but discipline keeps you growing." I thought that
Ooh.
was a really like neat approach to it, because it's true. Like, you need motivation in the beginning to kind of get the cogs going, get the connection and the friction. But what's gonna keep you in that upward trajectory is the discipline that you have towards that goal, or that end goal, or the milestones toward the ultimate goal. Is having the discipline, and mindset is kind of everything when it comes to discipline. It's like, well, if you keep backtracking where this dot is here, but then what leads to that? And it's like, well, you have to have a mindset of discipline, and then you have to have people around you who are then going to help you with your goals, and with the mindset and all of that as well. So that's, I feel like, to me, that's the difference between discipline and motivation. Is they may initially start with the motivation, but you need the discipline to move forward and to continue on that trajectory.
I really like that. Yeah, discipline is an interesting thing because I feel like it's almost not like motivation. I feel like is sometimes fickle. Like you don't always feel motivated, like you're saying, to get out of bed or do another, you know, set. Discipline is a little bit more constant. But I think discipline, in my head at least, discipline is a little bit tougher to build. Because I think sometimes I like watching a motivational video and being like, ha ha. I feel at least inspired, and then I sit down to put on the running shoes or whatever it may be. I'm like, okay, this part's a little bit tougher. But I'm guessing it's just that habit. Like, if you keep doing it, you know, I want, but that's the building of the discipline.
Because then you start connecting those neural pathways in your brain too, because you're like, all right, I'm going to keep doing this, or I feel the slack starting to, okay, let me like let's reevaluate. I think the other thing too is keeping your goal front and center. Like, I have quotes and things all over my room, and different things to kind of help motivate, that maybe you just need to read in a moment where you're like, all right, this is why I'm doing this. This is my goal. Or having like a vision board or something, that in addition to those moments where you need to like visualize, maybe you need a reminder to visualize. Maybe you need that reminder of like, what am I doing this for? Like, what's the ultimate goal? And then to have it right there in front of you, like either in the morning, or like, I have my vision board, or my little bulletin board. It's overflowing at the moment, but
Love
that just
that.
means I have a lot of things that I do, or motivations that I need. But I think Mel Robbins had talked about like putting different things on your mirror in the bathroom, because you're gonna see it first thing in the morning. You're gonna see it anytime you go to the bathroom, but then you're also gonna see it at night before you go to bed, while you're brushing your teeth. Like, we do a lot of like routine things in the bathroom, and so it's like, well, maybe putting it in an area that you're gonna see it. Maybe it's for you, it's like your refrigerator, or for some people, it's their office cubicles, or wherever you are gonna need those moments of like, yes, this is why I'm doing this. I think that helps engage the discipline from maybe that moment that you had started with motivation that is starting to wane.
Oh, I love that. I'm totally gonna go to the bathroom after this and just like put
Start
post-its
putting
all over
post-it notes up.
the mirror. Yeah. Be like, all right, I love that. Because I think There's definitely a sense of if you're looking at something on repeat, this is kind of, I know some people do affirmations. I think if there's something about doing something on reading something on repeat where it starts to soak in, I think more than people realize. So if you're constantly looking at that quote or the board, I'm excited to see what that does in terms of mental.
Even my sister-in-law in her car, she has like a little strip of a quote or just something, or maybe it's a Bible verse, I don't remember, but she has it and it just stuck with me because she literally just has it right above like the CD player. And it's like, well, we spend a lot of time in our cars, so having that right there as a way to just have a reminder of maybe a goal that's in mind or something that you're working towards, putting it in places where you spend a lot of time, I think is really important.
Saturating your life with good quotes. Oh, I love
Yes.
that. I'm
I'm
excited.
a quote person. If you haven't figured it out yet, I am very much a quote person.
I was going through your Instagram before this and I was writing down some of my favorite quotes on your post. I was like, oh, we're going to talk about this if there's time because this is,
Exactly.
I love that. Yeah, quotes are good. Lean on the wisdom of those who came before.
Exactly.
So one of the other questions I had was, how do you keep growing, but also stay grateful for how far you've come? So kind of this being content while also pushing forward. How do you keep that balance?
That's a good question. I would say the most important thing is to not forget where you came from. So having those moments of pause that you look back, I'm of course going to use this like from the athlete side of things, like looking back at how far you've come. Like for me with jiu-jitsu, I remember still the day that I walked into my first gym and got partnered up with this very energetic teen, and he was excited to have a new gal on the mats, and I think he put me in a triangle or something. And I just remember being like, "I want to know how to do this." And he was like, "Oh, I can show you how to do this." I was like, "Okay,
Yes.
let's go." So to go from being like, I didn't know any of the language, the lingo, the positions, the verbiage, and even to like to this day, I'm still learning new words because of course there's certain things that cross over with judo. So I'm learning like some of the judo terms of things that I maybe hadn't realized. And even for tournaments and things, like looking back at like my white belt days, I don't say this to sound cocky, and I always try to preface this with people that maybe don't know me, but I know you know me a little bit better than that. But when I compete, I don't really get nervous. I know people who like get so nervous, like they puke, and I just never have had that. Like I enjoy competing, and I feel like I've made it even more so that I just love the atmosphere, the preparation, the day. Like I am just ecstatic when it's like, all right, it's time to compete. Like, let's go. Like, why would I be nervous about this? I love this. Like, this is what I love doing and I love competing. And so even back in my white belt days, just to see, like, yes, I loved it and I enjoyed it back then, but how much more calm I've become even from back then, looking back on that. And then for me, the most important thing is to go from being a student of the art to being a coach while still being a student. Like I'm still learning new things and I know I will still like indefinitely continue to learn new things with jiu-jitsu. That's the amazing thing about it, is there's always something to learn. Even if you're a coral belt, like there are still things to learn, people to learn from, either white belts or black belts. And so looking back at how far you've come and still, like you look back in your rearview mirror a few times while you're driving, but you still are moving forward. And so it's just being humble and looking back at where you've come and those who've been with you during that time and all of that as well, but then continuing to move forward towards whatever your new goals are, but not forgetting the milestones that you have achieved and the things that you have grown from and learned from since then.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah, when you were talking about like, don't forget where you came from, I was like, that makes so much sense in terms of keeping you humble because you're not pretending that you're just, oh, I've always been this good, but you know, you're kind of remembering those days. And I think that is actually, I love that answer because humility grounds us. It doesn't, you know, it keeps us centered, it keeps us focused. And when you have that humility, that's going to just help you grow faster and further because you're not getting cocky or you're not, you know, being like, oh, I have nothing to learn. I'm gonna just annihilate everyone. And because of that, you're going in focused. You're open to learning. And I think that's just a really good answer for anything that people are doing is that remember where you came from because that can help, that humility can help really, you know, branch off and grow.
Catapult you forward is important. And even like Like when I will talk with some of the gals and stuff, they're like, "I love your authenticity." I'm like, "Well, I wouldn't want to be any other way." So I don't know how to not be authentic. I know there's people who put on a facade or who maybe try to act one way or another because they think that, of course, makes them more accepted. I've never really had that issue. I don't know if it's from being homeschooled or what it is. Like I've just always felt like I should be myself, and I feel like it's fun because I'm even figuring out more about myself and who I want to continue to evolve to be. And being a coach has really helped me learn that. It's like I love teaching, I love helping, not because now I teach the morning class as well, so I can't just say the ladies because I help teach the morning class and there's guys who show up there. So just being a really good coach and example for any and all that I surround myself with at the gym or every day who I come in contact with or at my work or of course in Switzerland that was a business meeting slash vacation. And so who I was surrounding myself with there, and you always have opportunities to grow and evolve, which is really, really neat.
Oh, that is so cool, by the way, that you went to the jiu-jitsu gym in Switzerland. And
Yes,
I love
that
your,
was
yeah.
amazing.
That's so crazy. You said something like jiu-jitsu is a language. So there was kind of this instant camaraderie. And I thought that was just beautiful.
Yes, that was something special. Like to go, like I've only trained one other time out of the country, and that was last year when I was in Germany. And I had a friend who had came with me, so a little bit different when you're going solo, not knowing what to expect. And they all welcomed me, and it was so warm and inviting. And even though like a lot of them, most of them spoke both languages, so that was nice. With the main professor, he didn't, and they just translated for us. And so it was nice just to have somebody like translate some of the positions and things, and yet when I would visual like watching him display it was like, well, jiu-jitsu is a language in itself because I know what he's showing. It probably helps that I was a purple belt showing up and not necessarily a white belt, but it helped because I already knew some of the moves, but I was learning some of the more refined details about that position or that technique that he was showing. It was really cool to get to see that and get to train. Plus, they have no air conditioning there, so it was some intense warm-ups, and I appreciated the challenge with that. But it made me realize, I was like, well, we take a lot for granted over here. We've got air conditioning and fans and all that stuff, and they just have a fan in the corner, and they love it because they get to train and they're not going to complain about that. And so you're like, you know what, I'm grateful to even be here and show up and get to train. So
I love that so much. I love the idea of just having so many kinds of language beyond the spoken language. I've found that there have definitely been times where I'll meet somebody who I don't speak their language, and we have this interaction, and it feels sometimes even deeper than other conversations I've had, where we're both speaking the same language. And that always kind of blows my mind how deep you can go. There was this man on a this older gentleman on the train in Japan, and we didn't speak much of each other's language at all. But in the end of us kind of trying to point to things, he handed me this tiny little paper crane. And there was just this really special moment of like, there was something that happened. Like we just had like this moment of sharing of just like seeing the world in this beautiful way. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's so cool.
a special moment. I would say I had the same just like encounter where I was like, wow, these people seem so like genuine. I kind of had to think about it. I think it's there's a level of vulnerability when you're willing to understand, like, I don't know your language, you don't know mine, but yet we're human beings and I respect you respect me, and I'm going to try to understand what you're saying. And when both parties are, there's just this, like you said, this level of vulnerability and authenticity that I feel like registers beyond a spoken language, which was neat to experience. And it sounds like that's what you had too. So that's really awesome.
Oh, so yeah, it's so beautiful. Travel is so good.
Travel is amazing. Yes. After doing that, like I was like, okay, what am I planning the next trip? I gotta go. And I think that's why I like traveling for tournaments, but it's something else when you go out of the country. So
And to a place like Switzerland, where every turn way you turn is just stunningly beautiful. Unreal. Also, I like what you said about moving from student to coach, because I think that this is so important in any skill. Like for me as a writer, even starting to teach writing has really transformed my technical ability and even my creativity. Sometimes my students come up with these wild ideas and I kind of have to keep up, I don't know, they have questions about how do you structure this part of a story, how do you build tension, or they'll have these different questions. And it's fascinating to me because there are some things where I've done kind of automatically and I don't have to think about it, but then having to think about it deeply enriches the books that I am working on. So I love that kind of this focus on move from student to coach while also remaining a student, because coaching, I think, is going to make you a student in a whole different way, you know?
It's almost like when you are you're a student and you have the unfamiliarity with the positions or the techniques, or like in your case, the writing and the mechanics of it all. But then after you become skilled in that, it's almost second nature. And so you're doing it automatically. But then when you have to slow down and become a coach that's explaining it to somebody else who was just as much of a beginner as you were when you first started, you break things down in such detail that it's almost like refining the information that you maybe knew but needed to be sharpened. And
Yeah.
then the questions that they present make you think about it in a different way than what you had when you were originally a student. So then it's like you've become a student all over again, even though you're playing the role, you're in the role of being a teacher or coach or an instructor. And so then when you have that happen, you're like, oh wow, like it's like a whole new world. It's all these other avenues that open up, and these doors or these pathways, and you're like, oh wow, I hadn't thought about it that way. But even though like you're still skilled at it, but now you have another approach or maybe another way of thinking about it. It's neat because then you take those tools and put those in your toolbox as you're getting the more detailed material or understanding of it. Of the art form or whatever it may be. And I feel like you even have a newfound appreciation for maybe the patience that you had with yourself being a student, or for the coaches that coached you and had to break it down and work with your learning style. And so it's like, it's, I guess I'm gonna assume it's like when when you become a parent and you're like, wow, like these are all the things that maybe you took for granted as a kid that now you have become a parent yourself, and then you see things in a whole new light. I'm gonna assume that's probably what it's like, but it's very unique, I guess, to become a coach while still being a student. And
Stepping into those new shoes, we're like,
yeah,
oh,
exactly. Like
wow.
I had to think about that for a second. I'm like, yeah, it
It
is.
totally is.
Like after you say something, you have to think back on it, like, yeah, that's what when you think back on your own words you just said, you're like, wow,
was good. And and from what I've heard from parents, I feel like they said the same thing. So I think it's true, where it's like they're like, wow, I didn't fully appreciate like some of the parenting techniques that, you know, my parents used, and that's amazing. So
learning like each individual person's style, because nobody's cookie cutter. And so you may say or show something one way that has to be shown in a different way for it to click. And then when you go to do the technique again yourself after you've maybe seen four or five alternative ways of doing it, and you're like, oh dang, all right, well there's even ways to make my game better or hone in on my craft. I think that's how you keep progressing too, is being a coach while being a student.
Oh, I love it so much.
Me too.
It's like, let's go win at life. Let's see. I think there was one. Oh, okay. I'm just gonna pull up a couple quotes that I really liked on your Instagram.
Okay, I'm ready.
Most wars are won or lost in our own heads. That's David Goggins. That was one I really liked too. This kind of, I guess, almost wraps, you know, summarizes everything we're saying. Like, mindset is so important when you're trying to go forward and you're trying to win. Yeah, I loved that one. And then this is another one more. In order to succeed, your desire for success should be greater than your fear of failure. Which, okay, both of those, I just want to say that those are fire. Those are so good.
To go off of the first one, I don't think, like, David Goggins, everyone knows who he is. Like
What a
his
guru.
approach to that, it's so true though. It's like, and I've said it before, I'm like, you can be defeated before you even step on the mats, because you've let those intrusive thoughts win. And so that's the main thing when you are getting ready to sign up for a tournament or come comp day. That you have to trust that the preparation that you've put into it up to that point, and the training that you've done, and the preparation that you've done, is gonna pay off, and that you have to trust in that and know that when you go and step on the mats, it's fair game. Doesn't matter what they've done. It doesn't matter how many hours they've put in. You have to believe that you put in more. You have to believe that you did everything that you could to prepare for that moment that's about to transpire.
I love
So that's
that.
a good, that's a really good quote there. And then the same thing, you can't be afraid of failure. And when you sign up for a tournament or when you put your application in for a job interview or whatever it may be, when you want to pursue a business deal, nothing is guaranteed, but certainly it's not guaranteed if you don't give it a try. And so if you don't do it or you don't attempt it, then you're really never going to know. And so that's I guess that's the only thing that is guaranteed, is that it's not going to happen because you didn't even put the effort or the work in or chance that risk of failure to succeed.
I love that. Yeah, the don't be afraid of failure. I think because I think some people have this kind of dichotomy in their head where it's failure or it's winning. And I've been realizing no, it's 100%. You just keep failing until you win past like where you win big. And I remember even pitching my book to agents. I'm in the process of doing that and. I remember just kind of the, when I first started this, every rejection just kind of was, a spear to the heart, oh my gosh, they didn't like my years and years of work. How
You're bearing your soul of
could
your hard work to them, I can imagine. Wow.
Yeah. And then after a while, I remember at one point being like, you know what? I'm gonna go try to get 30 rejections. So I know I'm doing something. Like I'm putting in my work for my dreams. I'm gonna go out and get 30 rejections. And I've actually gotten some some people asking for full manuscripts now, which is a
Hey, there
huge
you go.
win.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So it was just really a fun thing then, because someone would send back a rejection, I'd be like, check, I got one closer. I'm it shows I'm putting in this work for this big dream I have, and I think that that's kind of a cool, I don't know, tie in with that quote as well, where it's like, yeah, if you want something, then the failure is actually kind of part of the game, and it's not the end. It's just another stepping stone closer to that win. So
It's the journey. It's not being so focused on the loss or the failure that if anything you're going to fail forward, because a failure is still a stepping stone moving towards your goal. And even though in the moment it may hurt or it may suck, and rejection isn't fun and failure isn't fun and having to walk away or regroup or whatever, but in the end it's like, well, I still am making an a forward momentum towards the end goal. I think that's where a lot of people get lost. I don't know the exact words of the quote, but they're saying is most people were a few steps away from winning or a few steps away from the success of XYZ endeavor, and they gave up on themselves before they were able to see it through.
don't do it. Don't do it. Just keep fighting.
Do not give in.
Success is on the other side of failure, and it's beautiful.
Yes, exactly.
Wonderful.
I
Well,
think it was from to tie back in, because I know we had talked about it with our last podcast episode, but the Divergent movie,
yeah.
something that he had said to her, he was like, fear doesn't shut you down, it wakes you up. And that always like stuck with me, and to kind of think like what that means. It's like fear of failure should not deter you or shut you down from pursuing your goal. If anything, it should ignite the flame and it should encourage you to move forward even more ferociously. And so to finally like put the pieces together with what he meant by that, I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. That makes sense.
And that is such a mindset thing, because that's
It
you
is.
saying like something, let's just say a lion pops up on the horizon. There's like there's two choices. You freeze and you run, or you're like, all right, me versus this thing, like whatever it is that you're facing down, it's totally a shift there in mindset of, it's gonna wake you up. It's gonna ignite something in you, and you're just gonna work harder because of that. So, oh, so good. So thank you so much for coming on this episode.
Absolutely.
Everyone who's
Yes.
listening, definitely go check out Sarah Swy Attack on Instagram for inspirational quotes and photos. Yeah, trying to think if there's any
For
final
having
words.
me on and reaching out and being able to have this dialogue was fun. And Yeah, it's neat to have the chance to kind of speak your mind or share this with everybody. But most important thing I would say to draw from this is like, don't give up on your dreams, even hardships or injuries or whatever comes about. Like, continue to push forward. And like with you, with your book and people now wanting manuscripts, well, how many declines or no's did you get? You just got to keep pushing through until you find the right person who sees the material or what you're going to bring to the table and wants to pursue that. So. Yes, thank you for having me.